Hello and welcome to the ISOL podcast. I'm Nadia Frontier. In this podcast, I chat to the ordinary people who do extraordinary jobs to make sure that the work at the British Antarctic Survey continues in the polar regions. In this episode, we're focusing on the lifestyles of people based at the research stations, specifically their dietary preferences, how they're managed, and who is responsible for the provisions that make up every meal. First up, I'm joined by Tom, Cameron and AJ. At King Edward Point, we've heard from Tom and Cameron before in the KEP special midwinter episode, but AJ is new to the show. All three are vegan, and they spoke to me about the challenges of maintaining non-meat and vegan diets in a part of the world where fresh vegetables are a rarity, both as deliveries and in the local environment. After that, you'll hear my interview with Olivier Hubert, the Basque catering manager and chef with 30 years of experience of feeding those working who come to Antarctica. But now, back to King Edward Point and some introductions with AJ up first.
I'm AJ. I'm one of the boating officers here at KEP. As you can probably tell from my accent, I'm not from the UK. I'm from New Zealand. I drive boats and I like sports.
Hi, I'm Cameron. I'm the station leader here at King Edward Point. I'm not from New Zealand.
Amazing. And Tom?
Yeah, I'm the doctor here at King Edward Point. And in a previous life, I was a marine biologist. So, yeah, it's a great place to be.
So you guys got the job and the offer to live in one of the most remote and inaccessible places in the world for 12 months. What was your initial thoughts and feelings when you got this offer?
Definitely excitement. I'd wanted the job for about a year and a half previously. I was able to get the job. Arriving here, it was a beautiful sunny day, seeing the mountains, the clear blue skies and the water. It was just full of excitement, really.
Tom, do you remember what you felt?
On getting the job, pure excitement. Fulfillment of a lifelong dream. Yeah, just amazing.
Along with excitement, I had a slight worry as to how my wife would react when I told her.
That's absolutely fair enough.
Totally fair enough, yeah.
Cameron, did you have any apprehensions other than how your wife would react before coming here?
No, not at all. I've done it three times already.
AJ?
I guess there's definitely a slight unknown. We met for a short amount of time, everyone on station, so there's the PDT training, but otherwise you don't really know how everyone is. So there's the unknown of, am I going to get along with all these people? I've never done the job before. I've got experience from other work, but I haven't done this specific job. So there's a lot of unknown kind of quantities. So I guess there is a bit of apprehension on how will it all go down, and especially for a year, which is a long time.
Yeah, again, the same sort of, like I've been on expeditions before, I've been on remote living before. So I was aware of my diet requirements and what I was going to eat. So I did wonder how that was going to go play out. Only doctor, 1,000 miles from the Falklands, which isn't a big centre. There's definitely a bit of apprehension there.
And interesting that you're a doctor. I don't meet many plant-based doctors either. So was it quite accepted, your decision in that sphere of medicine and GPs?
Definitely much more so now. Evidence usually takes a while to sort of say, it takes roughly like 10 years for sort of scientific papers and evidence to filter down to the sort of shop floor doctors. So when I first started, it was definitely much more fringe, whereas now it's definitely hit the mainstream now, and people are much more aware of it.
Cameron, did you think it would be possible to maintain a plant-based diet in Antarctica before coming? Also massive for you because you're the station leader and ordering a lot of the food.
Yeah, I knew it'd be no more difficult than any other diet. So Bass have been, at least while I've been with them, really good at providing for everyone's different diets. So I've been on stations before with vegans and I've always been vegetarian with Bass, and there's been no issue with that at all. And the one thing that I was quite looking forward to is quite a lot of vegetarian food is very like dairy heavy, which is never my favorite. So moving to vegan has definitely made that better.
Oh, easier. Okay. Yeah. Did you expect, AJ, that you would be able to keep your diet on one of the most isolated and remote research stations?
I'll be honest, I was quite worried. Initially, I had put it in a place in my brain not to really think about. And then when I met Tom quite early on, he did my medical assessment. We had a chat and we both realized we both mentioned that we were vegan. And that was then just a massive relief, because I knew I knew to live with someone who was also vegan would make the whole thing a lot easier. To do it by yourself would be much more of a challenge.
And then Cameron, were you influenced at pre-deployment training in the UK, or is this more of a move when you came down to the station?
It was in training beforehand. So as I said, I've been vegetarian for a long time, but I've been cutting down slowly on like dairy and eggs and things. It's been something I've been thinking about. And then when it turns out that there were two other vegans, it just made sense that instead of cooking like a separate vegetarian meal for me, it just made sense if I also joined in.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting that 3 out of 8 of the team are vegan.
Yeah. And you yourself are vegetarian.
Yeah, essentially.
And then there was Louis as well on station who went vegan for 3 weeks just before midwinter, and he's kind of stopped eating meat since then really as well.
On that, in just the run-up to midwinter, there was a meal being held and you had to, on the WhatsApp messages, you had to opt in to eating meat. It was the unusual option as opposed to the accepted option, which was a really interesting sort of shift.
So Tom, this station has been your home for 9 months now. How would you reflect on the ease of maintaining the diet that you would at home or in the other world, as you like to call it?
Yeah, I definitely sort of had this similar experience to AJ before coming down. So with three of us, it's been super easy. There's been no issues at all. And everyone's been really understanding as well. So the other team members have been really sort of great at making sure they cook vegan, doing their best. And it might not be something that they would normally have done, but it's been, yeah, they've been really supportive as well, which is also really nice.
Very impressed with the food quality. I think it just makes it just so much easier, and especially if you have other people. So it's not like an inconvenience. AJ, you're able to create loads of variety in worldly foods. And do you find that it is quite easy to make plant-based dishes?
Before I came here, I actually hadn't done that much cooking. I was quite lucky in that my previous job meant that we had a chef on board the ships that I was working on. And then when I'd be traveling countries where it was quite cheap to eat out. So I tended not to do much cooking, to be honest. So I think the like learning curve to cook was probably a little bit steep, but I think the big thing is that I've been lucky that I've done a lot of travel, so I've eaten a lot of places around the world, and so I kind of just try and recreate the flavors of the good food cooked for me in the past.
That's so interesting. I had no idea about that. I think you're one of the best one of the best chefs, and the variety that you're able to create different flavors. I have heard you don't follow a recipe, which has surprised me even more now.
I think I don't do things in half measures. It's probably a good thing and also a fault. And so when I try something, I tend to try and go a little bit all out with it.
Cameron, what kind of substitutes have you ordered as a response to subbing dairy or different dishes with alternatives?
I mean, the main one I regularly order is we go through a lot of dairy-free milks. So I have to try order them off whichever one turns up, we're generally quite happy with. Otherwise, just trying to make sure that there is a good stock of like frozen vegetables and loads of like nuts and pulses and beans is the main thing. We have been lucky and had a few like vegan alternatives, like vegan mince and sausages and those things that just make it a bit easier for people to cook with. But the main one is just, yeah, making sure that there's shed loads of frozen veg and stuff like that.
And I mean, following on from that, from a health perspective, ultra-processed food, so vegan alternatives, definitely not as healthy as just dried beans and frozen veg.
I think I've tried to get a bit creative and to make a fish pie thing once that, not directly from the person, but got back to me that it wasn't that well received. And not everyone's happy as well. There's 8 individuals on station that all have their own kind of tastes and comforts and that kind of thing. You can't cater for everyone. And I think that's the good thing about everyone cooking a day a week is we get so much variety.
How does your lifestyle and being surrounded by such an intense abundance of wildlife influence you or reinforce the choices that you're making?
It just kind of reinforces that we, without sounding too preachy, like need to do everything we can to protect them, because wildlife numbers and whole species are just vanishing and the habitat's disappearing. So to be so lucky to see here all the seal colonies and the penguin colonies and albatross and all the other birds that we get. And so it reinforces to me that I should be keeping my lifestyle as environmentally friendly as possible.
On station, you can kind of see all the animals, and we live like in close proximity to all of them, and everything feels like it's a bit on a knife edge. On, you know, obviously there was a big slaughter of whales and seals for fur seal, the furs and that kind of thing, and everything's a bit on a knife edge. And so I think living in such close proximity to the stuff that people spend thousands of dollars to come and see, of course, everyone loves to see penguins and that kind of thing, but there's also many other things that we need to protect. And seeing those cute, fluffy penguins and seals or whatever is just a really great reminder for that.
Even here, we do get marine debris and like old fishing gear and stuff appear on the beaches. So like nowhere is safe or clean, even somewhere as remote as here.
Even about a couple of months ago, we noticed a really strange vibration on one of the jet boats. So we hauled it out of the water, and it was some trash from a fishing vessel. I directly saw that in my job and kind of its impacts as well.
Next, I spoke to one of the people responsible for the quality and ingenuity which goes into meal planning and supplying the stations with everything they need. Catering manager, Olivier Hubert.
Well, hi, Nadia. Thanks for having me. I'm a French chef living in England and working for the British Antarctic Survey. I first heard about bass a long time ago when I was quite keen to go and have an adventure somewhere cold and remote. And I came across a job offer in the caterer it was. My wife at the time was heavily pregnant with her first child, and she, how shall I put it, she suggested to me that this might not be the best of times to go gallivanting at the other end of the world. So I took the point and stayed home. And then something like, I don't know, 20, 25 years later, the same thing happened again. The job offer sort of popped into my in tray. And I was a bit more of a free spirit then. And I thought, oh, you know, why not? So I applied, not really thinking I would get it. But I did. I did get the job. So hugely lucky in that respect, but doubly so in that it was the year of a Halley move. So I went to Halley, and the station, the whole station was being moved over that big crevice that had opened up. And it turned out to be a sort of absolutely once in a lifetime experience. And I really loved it. And I thought, you know, I'd like to come back. My kids were still, my two youngest were still, you know, quite young, sort of very young teens. So I didn't really want to leave them for any great length of time after that. So I parked it again. And then came back to Bass once we were all off to uni, which is when we both went to winter together at Rovra in 21-23. It was a fantastic experience at many levels. And I came out thinking, you know, I'd be quite happy to work for Bass full time, which I think, you know, quite a few people feel that way once they've experienced it. It's just a matter of finding, you know, a niche for yourself. So the job I'm doing now didn't exist at the time. So I sort of hung around, traveled around the world for about a year after the winter, thinking, you know, maybe there's no way for me, you know, within Bass to go. And then just when I'd just about given up, they created that job, the catering manager for the stations. And I saw that and I thought, this is it. That's for me.
And Olivier, you have just been on a grand tour of the sub-Antarctic islands. That's visiting South Georgia, where there's King Edward Point Research Station. Did you also go anywhere else on your grand tour of Antarctica?
This season was a particularly good tour in that I'd not been to the sub-Antarctic islands, so I really needed to have a look at their catering facilities and storage and all that. So I spent 3 months on aboard the SDA, which is the Bass ship, visiting all those bases. So that was Singe, Bird Island, and King Edward Point, both on the last two on South Georgia. Made a couple of stops at King Edward Point and Deception Island, which was great, really, really interesting and unexpected. So it's nice when you get those little perks when you're traveling.
Amazing, Olivier. And in addition to your decades of catering experience, starting at a Paris catering school, a similar one to my dad when you were very young, and then continuing working in private schools, you have
such a unique skill set, which you can transfer to Antarctica, but also your natural history side. So just as I interview you now, whilst you're at home, I'm looking at your wall behind you, full of crazy, quirky, like, I think there's some egg cases of sharks there. But we all know, and everyone that's had the pleasure to be with you on station, that you have this amazing talent in order to be able to draw the natural world and really make it come to life. So let's talk about your job and actually what that involves and what happened before your position. So right now, is it that you are responsible for ordering all the food for all of the British Antarctic 5 research stations? And that could be provisions for up to a year or multiple years?
So yes, that's correct. I mean, it's not the only thing I do in my job, but it's a very, very important part. Everything we consume down there, and it's not just foods, it's literally everything, we have to bring down. So we call this relief, and relief takes place once a year. So the SDA will sail down from the UK, pick up a few more bits and bobs on the way, either in Uruguay or in Chile or on the Falkland Islands, and deliver all those goods to the stations. As far as food is concerned, it is once a year. In the case of Halley, it's every other year. So that's quite extreme there. We do have a small percentage of sort of seasonal deliveries, shall we call them. We call them freshies, basically fruit and vegetables that we get either from Punta or from the Falklands. But this is just a top up. It's just a little luxury and help the chef also sort of make the offer a bit more appealing. It's quite a puzzle to try and sort of piece it together, make sure that we don't run out or don't overorder, and that the chefs will have all the ingredients that they need to produce, you know, good food that is appealing, that is nutritious, and that will keep people healthy and happy in their minds as well as in their bodies.
It's absolutely amazing what you can do in the absence of fresh foods. I was just speaking to somebody recently who has spent multiple seasons at Halley, and he said that they've never had fresh food at Halley during that whole time. But yet, how do you get nutrition and sustain a balanced diet in the absence of fresh food?
So Halley is probably the toughest place that, you know, that we have to keep alive. On other stations, the situation is a little bit different. However, it is still challenging. You can't just run to the shop if you've forgotten the milk or sliced bread or whatever. You really have to survive with what you have in your stores. As far as nutrition is concerned, things we use are either frozen or dehydrated or canned. That tends to have an impact more on the gustative qualities than on the nutritional ones. So you can still eat very well. You will get your protein, your fibers, your vitamins, and so on and so forth, as long as we make sure that we offer a very wide range of foods, which we try to do. So we have frozen vegetables, frozen fruit, berries. We also have dried pulses, lots of lentils and peas and beans. We do offer animal and vegetable proteins, so a lot of meat, a lot of fish, plenty of dairy. Dairy freezes quite well. People might not think of, you know, cheese as something you necessarily put in the freezer, but it does freeze very well. The taste is not really affected too much. It's more of a consistency for some of the cheeses. And this is true of most things. And I think that's probably the biggest challenge when it comes to vegetables, in that frozen veg, you know, tastes kind of okay. They're never going to taste as nice as the fresh version that's just come out of the field. But they taste okay. And if you prepare them well, they will be fine. However, they will lose, you know, being made mainly of water, they will lose a lot of their structure and of their integrity. You have to be particularly careful with that. And that's difficult to replace. And that's why I think whenever we can get fresh fruit and veg on station, it is such an event, because that sort of crunch, you know, that texture of fresh fruit and vegetable is something that you just cannot replicate. If you, you know, once you've frozen them, you've lost it. You can't get it back.
There are certainly a lot of challenges that the Antarctic chefs have to deal with, and you being responsible for the provisioning of all of these foods, do you have to work with nutritionists or dietitians in order to sustain the diet and to have such a variety and ensure that there is a balance of our essentials?
So I've worked with dietitians in the past. We don't currently use a dietitian at BASS. All the chefs that we employ, you know, have got a good understanding, a good basic understanding of what makes a well-balanced menu. And my job really is to supply them with a menu or a set of menus that contain all those sort of vital blocks. So we make sure that, you know, there are some animal protein, there are some vegetable proteins, there's some carbohydrates, there's lots of fruits and vegetables and fibers, and some dairy, and yes, a bit also of the luxuries, you know, the sugars and the fats, which, to be fair, we probably offer in greater quantity down there than you would have back home. But you have to bear in mind that a lot of people, you know, we work in a cold environment. Some people are very active down there, work outside. They do need the calories. And it's amazing how much of a difference it makes to how cold you feel, whether, you know, you've eaten or not. You know that you've experienced this, Nadia, but anyone who's sort of worked in the field or, you know, been on a mountain in cold environment, you're feeling a little bit chilly, a little bit cold, your core is cooling down. You have a little something to eat immediately, you're warming up. So it's very important.
Absolutely. We are essentially like seals when we're on station. We do need to build up those fat reserves to an extent, and you definitely help to facilitate that. Olivia, you are famous for your dessert platters, or buffets, I should probably appropriately call them, where you provide an insane array of desserts. Even that translated to the winter, where there was only 23 of us, and I think there was probably at least 23 desserts, so we had one each to choose from. But it is so important, and I definitely, when I look back on pictures, I feel like I was quite chubby. I definitely remember eating probably almost close to maybe double my calorie intake and having desserts every day, which I do not do in the real world.
Yes, I think that's true, yeah.
Let's talk about dietary requirements. Are there any dietary requirements that are particularly difficult to accommodate in Antarctica? For example, at the height of the season in the summer, you could have 170 people, and that turnaround is quite rapid. So you don't have a consistent menu of dietary catering options, I guess.
No, that's correct. What we do have is a list of all the dietary requirements. So we do know in advance who's going to be on station and what their particular dietary requirements might be. Our main problem is that we don't have a lot of counter space. So if you imagine, you know, it's a sort of standard staff restaurant where people come up to a hot and cold counter and help themselves. So with allergies, we need to be extremely careful with cross-contamination. Therefore, you know, we need to put things away from the rest, segregate everything. And we just haven't got the counter space to do that very easily. We need to know, we need to plan, we need to organize ourselves sort of quite strictly in that respect. I mean, just feeding people down there, you know, is not an easy thing. Any extra requirement is going to complicate the equation. Our main concern really was with people suffering from severe allergies, so people at risk of anaphylactic shock. It has a huge impact. I think BASS has realized that, and nowadays people at risk of anaphylactic shock are no longer deployed, which is regrettable for the people in question, and I understand that. However, from our point of view, it's a huge relief, because it was asking us to manage a very high risk in very, very difficult conditions. So we still do get people who are allergic to things, but not to the point where, you know, it's going to kill them. And this is something we take very seriously and we manage as best we can. And of course, with the VacPack machine, we can now cook those special meals separately, VacPack them straight away, label them, and then all that person's got to do is just pop the bag in the boiling water, and then you are. It's a perfectly safe way of dealing with that problem. And we've been sending people in the field with sort of really, really complex dietary requirements, people who could not have, you know, at least as long as my arm, and we've managed to do it. So I'm not saying it's easy, but it's feasible. And what really helps us is that we know when people come through the door, who is allergic to what, and what particular diet we need to have ready for those people, which is not something you, it's not a luxury you have when you run a restaurant where people just come through the front door and you just have to be prepared to meet any eventuality.
Being vegetarian or plant-based is increasingly becoming an important and really common dietary choice. Are you able to manage and cater for that in Antarctica when there's so many people on station at a time?
The answer is yes, and it's not always easy. As a chef, I always find it a real struggle due to the fact that we don't have fresh fruit and vegetables. And if you're a vegetarian, you know, this is going to be your mainstay. You do lose some of the flavor and you lose all of the, well, a lot of the texture when you sort of freeze vegetables. So I find that a real challenge. However, we're still able to offer, I believe, a good range of vegetarian food. It is so mainstream nowadays that it's just unthinkable not to have vegetarian offer. One of the things we try and make sure of is that we do have enough protein on offer for vegetarians. Things like tofu, like tempeh, chickpeas, all those kind of things. We're using also various sort of corn and sort of micro proteins to make sure that people get plenty of protein as well as their fibers and all the rest. Vegan is one step further. That obviously is difficult to cater for wherever you are, if you're not, you know, specialized vegan restaurant. Again, we try very hard to make sure that those people are also sort of well looked after.
You definitely do a really good job. And I think the variety and like depth and breadth of different products that are available for vegetarians, but also for plant-based options are really good. It's amazing what you can do even in the absence of fresh fruit and veg. And like you say, there are lots of alternative protein sources. And what about also catering for religious dietary requirements like halal or kosher? How is that managed on station?
Well, pretty much in the same way that we manage dietary, you know, any other dietary requirements. It's not something I've had to contend with very often. I can only think of one occasion at Rovra where we had a sort of a religious dietary requirement. And what happens usually is that those people tend to go for a vegetarian kind of diet, which, you know, obviously makes it a lot easier for them to monitor what they're having.
And meals are such an important part of life on station. And how important is food to morale when you're so isolated? For me, I think it's like the most important moment of the day when we all come together at mealtimes. But how does that feel in the kitchen for chefs and also more broadly managing that?
Oh, absolutely. I think mealtime is paramount down south. There aren't, you know, a lot of distractions and people work pretty hard. So getting together to share food is hugely important. We social animals, we need to sort of be together and talk and exchange views and ideas and joke and spend some time together. Mealtime is, I would say, is probably the highlight of the day for a lot of people. You've got to bear in mind a lot of people will work in fairly remote conditions. And when they come back to the canteen for a break, it's a chance to warm up, to have a nice bite to eat, and to catch up with friends and colleagues. So that's super important. The canteen and the bar are really the two main, the two focal points on station, wherever you are, really.
And also social events, they're really important. For example, celebrating St. Patrick's Day, of course, the classics like Christmas and New Year.
also Burns Night, a Scottish tradition. So are there any foods that you save for these special occasions where you know people need a little bit of a boost and an injection of morale?
Yes, definitely. You mentioned Burns Night, so we order haggis and we usually put out a little bit of whiskey as well. Well, we try and create as many occasions as we can. There's basically no other entertainment down there than that which you create for yourself. So it's very much up to people on station to come up with ideas of things to do and to celebrate. So those milestones, if you want, are really, really important. They lift the spirit, and B, they help you keep track of time as well. So for instance, every Saturday is, you know, it's the big night of the week. So people will make an effort. They'll, you know, put on a clean shirt. Sometimes we have a themed dress up party. So people will dress up and the food is always central. Most Saturdays we try and come up with an idea of something a bit special, a bit different, to keep people engaged and happy and break the routine really. And food is brilliant for that. And if people are sort of feeling a little bit down, maybe, you know, the weather's been particularly bad and nobody's been able to go out for a while. Maybe the workload has been extreme and people are just run down. Maybe a bug's been going around the station and people are, you know, feeling a little bit sort of off color. That's really when the kitchen can make a difference, come up with a special night, put out something that people particularly enjoy, you know, some steaks or a nice, as you said, a nice, you know, buffet of desserts. And all of a sudden, people feel a little bit better about themselves.
Yes. And I think arguably you have the most important role on station. One of the most important jobs, definitely. You really are directly impacting everybody. And just to conclude, Olivier, if you could tell us what you think everybody should know about Antarctica.
Ooh, wow. I feel hugely privileged to have had the chance to go down there. I mean, I've now probably spent just under 3 calendar years living and working in the Antarctic. And I simply wish everybody could get a glimpse of how beautiful, how wild, how wonderful, and how precious that place is. And I'd like everyone to be aware that we really need to protect it any way we can, because it is a unique part of the ecosystem, and it is just stunningly beautiful.
Thank you, Olivier. It's been so lovely talking to you, and thank you for giving us your time to discuss different dietary options. And I hope that will also help listeners realise that if they do have particular or quite niche requirements, it is possible to cater for those with these amazing Antarctic chefs. So thank you, Olivier.
Thank you very much. The pleasure's been all mine.
If you enjoy Ice World, tell us. Make sure you leave a review on the Ice World page or wherever you get your podcasts. And remember that 5-star reviews help listeners find the podcast quicker, and that means that a lot more people will get to hear it. I'm Nadia Frontier, and thank you for listening.